You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. Frank, it's good to have you here this morning.
Good morning, Eric.
So Frank, this is the second time you've been here. Not many guests have come on a second time, but it's been several years. It's been 4.5 years since you were on this show, and so I'm kind of interested to see where life has taken you.
Well, thank you.
But we're gonna and the questions have changed a little bit over the years, not a lot, but I think I have a little better idea of what I'm trying to do, but we'll see. So who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
Who am I? I thought about that question, and I think it was said to me recently that I'm an indomitably positive spirit that really embraces folks. My mission, personal mission in life, is to spread joy and laughter. So that's kind of where I go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's taken well. Other times people need to have some sort of seriousness.
Right, or they're just, you know, they're not in a space to deal with your megawatt energy and joy and laughter.
That's right.
I can imagine, you know, sometimes I want to crawl under a rock. You know? but yeah, so that's your mission. But what else do we need to know about you to start this conversation?
I think it's important, especially recently, and I appreciate you having me back on it. Things have changed in my life, and as you get older, you know, you look back on things, and I'm about being healthy, physically, emotionally, mm-hmm. spiritually. I'm about sharing that with other people, and spreading that. It's easier to stay healthy than it is to get healthy. And that goes for mental, physical, and spiritual health. And that's what I try to do on a regular basis. When some folks want to argue or ridicule or evaluate to a point that's unnecessary, I'm like, well, what's next?
Uh-huh.
It happened.
Right, right.
What's next? What are we going to do about it or for it or with it and move on?
Right, right. It takes time to bandage or cauterize that wound, but then we need to figure out what's the next step. Yeah. I get it. You also brought some music with you. What would you like to open with today?
Cassidy. Cassidy is a Grateful Dead song by Bob Weir, and my daughter's name is Cassidy, and it inspired part of that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, here we go.
I have seen where the wolf is set wild silver string. I can tell by the mark he left you were in his dream. What you are and what you're meant to be speaks his name, though you were born to be. Born to be, Cassidy. Lost now on the country miles in his Cadillac. I can tell by the way you smile.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Frank Towner. So Frank, given the life you value now, what are some of the things you had to learn to know how to live it? What are the experiences you had to have to know how to live the life you value now?
A lot of that comes from my relationship with my family, my wife, longevity, realizing that it's not all about today, although we live in today, but everything you're doing today kind of adds up to tomorrow. I had a heart attack last year, although I would stand strong and say, you know, it was okay, it passed, but it never leaves me. It didn't hurt. It didn't affect me really in any way. It wasn't a knockdown, drag out, but it was serious to the people around me.
Well, yeah, you know, if the reminder of your mortality doesn't get your attention, it will theirs.
Exactly, and it wasn't like a, and I've told people, it wasn't like a broken limb or a scar where you've got pain and you can see it. I felt it. I went in. They took care of me. I felt great. Let's eat. Let's have coffee. Let's move on. And they're like, you got to take it slow. I had to take it slow for 6 months, basically.
Mm-hmm. And what does take it slow mean?
Take it slow means that you couldn't run, jump, load firewood, overexert yourself.
No stress.
Yeah.
No physical stress.
Yep. And anxiety and mental stress at work. Take your time, relax. Right. If you feel something, move back, which is something I never practiced before. So simple things like realizing where you're at mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, and being able to reflect on it and move away from it and then go forward. And a lot of times, I learned this a long time ago from my friend Scott, that you got to take care of yourself before mm-hmm. you can take care of anybody else. I've been a firefighter for 23 years. I'm now what we call the senior leadership team. I'm not on the tip fighting fires, but I'm right. in the house. And that was a number one rule. You've got to take care of yourself before you can save another's life. So it's important to me reaching this point now that I'm taking care of myself and my family, and the effect my wife's had on me as a friend and a lover and my spouse and having children. And now I'm going to be a grandparent, and that changed recently. That's a different
uh-huh.
outlook.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. So what you said that people's reactions to your heart attack were more profound to you. Being the extrovert that you are, it doesn't surprise me. You're always the last to know, in some sense. What did you notice in their reactions that you had to take seriously?
Right away, it was almost a look of fear. Like, well, you're gonna die. You need to take it easy.
Right.
You had a serious event. The most profound thing that was said to me, Eric, and by my friend Nancy, is you got a second chance. And a lot of people said you have a second chance, but their second chance was you got to live, you didn't die, and you have a second chance. Her second chance was more specific and said, now you've got a second chance to live differently
right.
going forward. How you eat, how you interact,
right,
how
right.
you do things. So that really set home with me that if that is true, that I have a second chance, then yes, my intake, my exercise, my movement, my relationships are to be cherished and looked at a little bit differently. And, mm-hmm. and the other thing, the hardest thing sometimes is saying no.
Right.
I don't need this food, or I don't need this relationship, or I don't need to go there.
Right, 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 right. And that, yeah.
And that's okay.
Right. So when you started practicing saying no to the extra food, to the extra stress, to the physical activity for 6 months until you were back in shape, what was that like?
Oh, it's agonizing for me.
Uh-huh.
I want to go faster. I want to go longer. I want to go stronger. I want to intake. I want to do things. And then to compound it, just for our listening audience and in our talk.
Sure.
I think I was blessed because I hurt my knee.
At the same time.
May 4th, I'll never forget, May 4th, when it was right at the point where I was feeling strong. I wanted to go hard and I hurt my knee to the point where it was painful just to get through the parking lot
sure.
to go to work. It was like, it was a way that was said to me, The Lord was talking to me. He said, slow down.
Yep.
Slow down. So that was, it was painful for me to do it. And part of the emotional aftermath of a heart attack and reading and talk to other patients and the doctors and the nurses, especially who are there kind of on the front line with you, heart patients have this feeling. And that's the emotional part that's so hard to overcome.
Mm-hmm, So, in a certain sense, you didn't know you were alive if you weren't pushing the boundary.
I would agree with that.
And how do you know you're alive now?
Good question. I have a card I kept that says, yes, if you're not... If you're not, let's say it, Frank. If you're not on the line, you're taking up too much space. If you're not pushing the limits, you're taking up too much space. Now, it's okay. I know I'm alive by having interaction with other folks, interaction with myself in a manner, and I don't have to go full bore. So, an example: I like to walk in the woods. And I can walk in the woods and really appreciate that. I don't need to harvest an animal. I don't need to go full and think about how I'm going to circle out. It's more about circling in and getting into the woods. Or if I cut firewood, I'm taking my time. If I'm with Melanie and we're having coffee, we're there. It's kind of more appreciation of that space. And I'm trying to share with other people whatever's happening now,
right?
Like us right now,
right?
You need to just kind of taste it and absorb it a little bit more. Maybe it's age.
Right.
But no, it's all happened this time period.
Yeah. I injured both of my knees because I slipped on a really steep bank when I was using a string trimmer. But I caught myself. But I caught myself in a way that really damaged the things that hold your knee, the ligaments that hold your knees in place. And it took about 3 to 6 months to really get that sorted out. And then about 4 months later, I turned 60. And that's the only birthday that's ever really had an effect on me, because now I'm the age that I'm now just a little younger than my grandfather was in my first memories of him. And he was one of the most kind presence in my life at that point. And I'm that old. It's just, you know, and there are injuries that now take a long time to get over. It's not that you won't. It's not that I'm going to not do some things that are kind of assertive and aggressive, but I don't need to be out there in the same way.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's a good realization.
Yeah.
And my relationship with several people at the Y, I see both extremes. They'll go hard. Older folks, and some of them are blessed with the ability to continue to go hard. Their body still allows it.
Right.
But mostly it's about perpetuity. It's about going and being consistent.
Right. And so how has this, you have a really interesting window onto others in terms of being at the Y. I want to ask you about that. I also want to ask you, let's start there. Having gone through the heart attack and having to say no to food and no to pushing yourself and trying to find kind of the sweet spot of consistency, but also of, I imagine you have to find what gets you excited, what gets you going, because if it's not pushing the limit, what is it that gets you going? I mean, there is. It's good to be here, but it's. What puts that gleam in your eye that you're just that the listener can't see over the radio these days? When you interact with others who are at the Y, there to work out or to just have play hard. What are you seeing, and how are you interacting with them now, different than you did a year ago?
Well, it's a good question. I can honestly say it's the interaction with folks and getting them to tell me, kind of like we're doing now, getting them to tell me about themselves. I will stop and take the time to interact and ask questions and get them talking. So I know that my friend Frank, who's there pretty regularly, he's telling me I've created a relationship with him. It's a personal relationship.
Sure.
With Andrew and Amanda, I can picture that these conversations that move. There's three things really, and family. That doesn't mean that they're blood family.
Right.
It means that they could be unblood related family. Unfortunately, we had a service on Friday, but the family that was there was invigorating, and I felt alive as much as we were there for that reason. And I like to be in the woods. I'm an avid hunter, but as I said, it's harvesting the animal isn't as important as being in that environment.
So
that
you're
moves
seeing
me.
It. Yeah.
I'll get up early and go there. Yeah. The other thing that's happened that's been very changing in my life. Monday after Thanksgiving, I was contacted by the half brother I didn't know I had, who had connected also with a half sister. That was so our blood father had three different relationships that fostered children that
right.
created children that we didn't know each other.
Wow!
So I've just gained a brother and a sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that this is all since Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big.
So okay. I'm going to go back here because one of the things that I've known you for 20 years. I don't know.
Right.
A long
yeah.
time. Not closely, but we've known each other in a variety of settings. You always acknowledge people. That's always been true. But what I hear you saying is that you take time to really try to get to know them.
Yes.
And that is a huge change for you, because just for you to slow down, you know, the Energizer Bunny is an appealing character, and a friendly character, but it's not an intimate character. And it seems like that quality of intimacy and intimacy with the woods.
Yes.
Is more what you're after than going out there to do something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no question. And as you know, and some of our listeners know, I clown. I perform as Crossroad the Clown, and it's interesting to perform and have that barrier broken because you're in makeup. A lot of people respond to you
right.
very well, and I've created some very nice relationships through clowning that still continue.
Right, right. And in a certain sense, that allowed you to experience a kind of intimacy that was contrived.
Yes.
But that allows you to go into that space. For a lot of people who have that boundary and don't have an occasion to know how to cross it, making the transition in life that you're making is almost impossible.
Other performers have performed and they leave. They don't create.
Right, right.
And sometimes there's a barrier. They have stage performer may not be as intimate as I am. Clowning because I'm hands on.
Right, and one of the things about what I understand from people who study this is that a majority of professional actors are introverts, and they perform so very well because they put all of their discipline into being that role, but it's not about the engagement.
Right.
It's not about what's necessarily what's coming back. It can be, but it's. That they don't get their jollies from the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, so the best clown gig is the one where the interaction is most between whoever's there and me. That's what makes the fun. Mm-hmm. You can't clown alone.
Right. And how because you are an administrator at a fairly decent sized organization, how has it changed your role?
Clowning.
The clowning and the heart attack. How have these experiences changed your role, particularly the heart attack?
I have, at work, because of the position as a CEO of a million-nine organization, 143 staff, 4,000 members, I have made a conscious effort to draw back just a little.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you reach a certain point where you can't get it all done, you take a break and go and do a workout, go for a bicycle ride, take a walk. Fortunately, it's variety enough that I can meet and talk with people. I can just walk through the hallways. One of the neat things of being at a Y is you can walk through the hallway and talk with kids.
Right.
And it lightens it up. So I've made a conscious effort to take care of myself during that time period. Clowning is almost the opposite in the sense that I am trying to serve the people that I'm clowning for, as I am at the Y. I'm trying to serve the Y. The Y produces scholarships for people, and that's one of my primary roles, is to raise the money necessary for scholarships. So I'm serving the community, and you can only do that if you take care of yourself. So it kind of comes back to that, Eric. Good question. That I need to take care of myself before I can serve others.
Right. And so as a clown, it slows you down too a little bit in terms of awareness.
Yes. Yep. Take your time.
But that can also be more grounding.
For me, I would agree. Yeah. It's been a interesting transition to balloons are interesting. I was told by the nurse, you can't blow up balloons manually. So I used a pump and I'm back. I can blow balloons manually. My cardiologist said, yeah, you can do that. So that was small but interesting.
Right. Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
I think that I put on a Grateful Dead song. This is a funny, The Monkey and the Engineer. Is that the one I put on there?
The only Grateful Dead one we had was Cassidy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we got Pony Boy, Little Martha, Blue Sky.
Oh, Pony Blue Sky then. Yeah. Okay. I thought I put The Monkey and the Engineer on.
Okay, we can find it later. Here we go.
Okay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. So Frank, you got a wake-up call in terms of this heart attack. And you've taken on a mission more. You've redefined your mission to help people to take care of themselves better, holistically.
Yes.
As you have taken on this mission, what have you learned that about people and their willingness or their unwillingness to do that? What has surprised you?
Good question. The people, extremes above, humans are so interesting. There's a bunch of them, too, that some are reluctant to change no matter what, and that change is either because of stubbornness or habit or maybe the inability and the inner strength to make a change. At the same time, people will say, I need to change. And they don't. And my friend Clay and I, we have a saying. We say, "Love you, don't change." We don't want to change so much that we don't love each other anymore for whatever reason.
Right.
So that doesn't answer your question totally. But I guess I found that there's so many people with so many different ones. Trivial as it might sound or menial, meeting people where they're at. If somebody can't change their intake or their exercise habit, but they think they want to, then let's meet them where they're at. It might be someplace real small, just a progress. It's been powerful to see those people that do make a significant change. And it's fascinating taking a closer look at humans to realize that sometimes that change is so dramatic that whoever that person was is lost. I see him moving so hard or so fast, and that they've changed. The alcoholic that doesn't drink anymore, that's on some sort of crusade. The person who's lost a whole ton of weight and their whole life has changed, and they won't have anything to do with anything that has it, and anybody else who does it wrong. The ex-smoker, they're probably the worst, right? But it comes back to that they need to do this to take care of themselves. And again, it comes back to family. That song, Blue Sky, is that's Melanie and mine's song. It's a great song, and it talks about just that simple life. And people should take care of themselves, not so much for themselves sometimes, but as the people that they love and care for. During the heart attack, it was clear that I was not scared. Mm-hmm. I was not afraid to die. I didn't think I was going to die. That was never really in my thought.
Right.
But the people around me looked scared, were scared for me, scared for Melanie. And like, I'm doing good. I tried to assure them that I'm good. You're okay, too. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Be aware. Yes. Eat the right food. Yes. If something happens, you want to do the proper things necessary to get yourself back. In a heart attack situation, you gotta get to the hospital. And,
right.
See a professional, but there's a lot of things you can do ahead of time.
So how have you set your life up so that you will eat less or will exercise more consistently? I mean, even though you're at the Y, it doesn't mean you're using the facilities for that purpose because you work there.
Right.
So how did you have to change your life to change the intake of food or the type of food or the type of exercise, the time for taking care of yourself?
I was fortunate, Eric, that when I went in and they asked me the questions of what do you eat, what do you exercise, what is your cholesterol, I was pretty good to start with.
Right.
My father died of a heart attack. My blood father died of a heart attack at 57. I was 58. So they chalked it up to heredity. Just you're good. However, to answer your question, I have become more moderate in my activities. So I will take a break. Yesterday was classic. I took a nap. That's kind of unusual for me, but I felt a little tired. I can take a nap. So awareness of the food and intake. And Melly's great because she takes care of me, watches me. He's like, every time you eat that peanut butter, there's X number. But I love the peanut butter.
Right.
But peanut butter is good for you in moderation.
Right, as are most things.
Yes, exactly. And that's a lot of what it's come down to. I've learned to appreciate some of the foods that others don't eat. Spinach. It's great. It's a great food. It doesn't need to be covered with a bunch of dressing. You can eat spinach. No,
right, right. And it's great fresh or steamed. I mean, it's, yeah.
And I've also been, I don't know if criticized is the right word, observed. I just eat. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't need to evaluate how it's made or
whatever
tastes like.
Whatever it's in front of you, you eat it.
If it's good, and if it's, I'm not going to eat something that's bad. I'm not going to overdo something.
And you haven't, and you never really gained weight.
No, always so active. I got some gene in me, but I go. And if I feel like I'm overweight, then I just move a little faster and eat a little differently.
Right, right, right. What, you know, when people say, I should do this a little differently, or I should exercise more, I should eat different, I should drink less, or should, you know, smoke, not smoke, or whatever. There's a certain kind of shame.
Mm-hmm.
That goes with that. And when a change, I don't find people willingly change themselves or engage others in effective change with shame. It doesn't work very well that way. But what I sense in you is you've been humbled. Yeah, and not humiliated, because that's a little bit like shame, but you've been humbled by this experience that you would not have chosen, but it wasn't exactly not on your radar screen if your father died at 57 from a heart attack.
And I didn't know that.
Oh, you
didn't
know
that. I honestly didn't know that he died of a heart attack. My mother told me years ago, but I thought he died at 42, and every test I ever took, I said, you're fine.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
So wow. I wasn't ready for it.
You were surprised. You were surprised.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good observation that you've made, because you're correct. Humbled by the reaction of other people, and going back to what Nancy said, I'm able now, because of that, to lead my life differently. So I'm embracing a little bit more, and going back to your other question, what I have changed is activity, anxiety. I'm more aware now of being anxious, anxiety, what's called stress. What I looked at as stress was, I can just keep going.
Right. You push through.
Yeah. You push through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now I realize if I'm getting to that point, breath, and I back off. Mm-hmm. I back off. I don't rush as much. I'm going to get there. It's going to be fine. And then when I feel like I am, I know I did. I booked the meeting too close to one another. I've only got 10 minutes to get there. You feel that anxiety. And I think I used to get off on that rush. And now it was a little difficult to draw back and say, give yourself time.
Yeah. It's a little bit of an addiction.
Yeah.
To run. I mean, I have the same. I mean, I used to run. There was a very famous theologian at the seminary I attended, Reinhold Niebuhr, and he would run up and down the stairs. And that was he was just constantly going. He also had a massive stroke in his 50s. But he did mostly recover from it. But it did change the rest of his life. But And a couple of my advisors noticed that I would run up and down you got to slow down. But I didn't take the you need to slow down as it wasn't effective for me to hear that from people. What I did notice is that from time to time when I was anxious or stressed and pushing, I would I was running to catch a subway car, and I tripped on the subway, and I didn't fall onto the track, but I fell onto the sandpaper edge. I mean, where they put this grit, really, really rough grit, and I made hamburger of my knee, tore up my pants. That told me, you need to slow down.
You remember that day.
I remember that day. That and I have the scar to remind me of that day, because it never heals over just exactly the same. But what struck me about your telling of the story, you were humbled by people's fear for your well-being. They were afraid they were going to lose you.
Yes.
And oftentimes when we want to communicate our love for someone, it's why can't you change? Why can't you do this better? Why can't, rather than, oh my, I can't think of life without you.
Well put.
And
And people that came you didn't think were going to be affected, and they were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. People's today. It's always
because, interesting. Because partly, yeah. And part of this, how do we really tell our stories in ways that have a positive impact on other people's lives?
Positive impact. That's go back to the beginning question. That's what I try to do.
Yeah.
That's me.
But they had to do it to you for you to get it.
Yes. Yep. That humbling is a good word. It changed. And that is part of being here with you today. I really want to come back and see the different part of who Frank is.
Right. Right. And what? So there's something about institutional church, and there's something about the why, which is an outgrowth of 19th century. You know, we're going to have a positive impact on the men of America, the young men of America, as a Christian, you know, association where they can live and exercise and get their lives in order in a time of upheaval. We're in a time of upheaval again.
Yes.
But part the gung-ho institutional missions often get in the way of the humble reality of lives well lived, because the mission sets a kind of equality, a surface level of representation and a surface level of politeness that often doesn't allow for the more nitty gritty working through of what you just went through.
Yeah, you just put it good there. The humble lives of, how did you say that?
Don't ever ask me to repeat what I said, because I am speaking eloquently, if at
it
all,
flows.
It flows. It's inspired speech, and it doesn't replicate well. It doesn't warm over.
That was good.
But so how there. With the scholarships and with the work that you do at the Y, there is a desire to be that humbled presence in the community. How can an institution that has to fly its flag loud and clear and high also be that humble space?
It's helpful for me to be able to lead the charge for something that's bigger than I am. So reaching out to the people about what the Y has to offer, as so many organizations in town and fellow brothers and sisters who run these organizations, who are part of these organizations or part of several organizations, being part of it, it's easy to be humble but still carry the flag proudly, because it's really bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bigger than the people at the Y. It's a cause or a movement that we strongly believe in.
Right, and people have many different ways of living it out.
Yes, yeah, which is really neat.
And of being and of honoring it that may be completely different and almost incompatible.
Yeah, yeah, it's we looked at a lot of things and across the national USA, YUSA, connecting seems to be a big thing. Learning, being healthy, and connecting, and having some fun.
Right.
You shouldn't have to come to the Y just to beat yourself up and leave in a sweat. Play some pickleball, shoot some pool, have a nice shower, a little sun, you feel good. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
Right, right, right.
In cooperation with other organizations. That's one of the other things that I'm when you talk about what drives me, what moves
sure,
me,
sure, sure.
Is can we get other people or organizations together to make something happen.
And what who are you getting? What are some examples
right now,
of who you're getting together
right
now?
Yeah.
And what you're trying to make happen?
TC3, the YMCA in Cortland, and the YWCA in Cortland, and the YM in Ithaca are holding the first annual Panther Games at TC3. Fun games for families to create some income to support scholarships for all our organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun, working with the group of people. Last summer we got together, it was 11 different organizations, and had a carnival for the community.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for us, it was us giving back to that community that supported us. And working with everyone and doing that was just fun. So I'm constantly, my question when I meet with other organizations and individuals and leaders is, what can we do together that serves us and the community in some way? What can we do together? And that leads to a good conversation. And sometimes things gain traction, other times they don't. Right. But and sometimes it comes back.
Right.
A couple of years later, IPEI and I and the Y are doing a collaboration at their spelling bee.
Mm-hmm.
The Y is going to be down there providing some childcare and some activities and clowning, and that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that.
Neat. What would you like to play next musically on your list there?
Pony Boy.
Okay, here we go. Did I accidentally hold it here? Where did Pony Boy go? Hang on just a second here.
If it's not there, we can go to Long Hair Country Boy.
We can get it. It's just for some reason, I think when I may have hit the
Pony Boy, I can talk about the background of Pony Boy for our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
Pony Boy is a song by Dickie Betts that really is an example of Dickie Betts, kind of laid back and having a good time.
And here we go. Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. So Frank, the way I usually close the show is with, you know, how do you take care of yourself physically, emotionally, intellectually, and how do you know you need to do it? We've done a lot of that over the course of this hour because of what brought you in here for a second interview, the some awareness that you've had in life from the heart attack and learning how to live differently. So I think I'm going to change that question this time, unless there are things you want to add to it. How do you see yourself taking care of yourself into your old age?
Exercise. I see people rush to the YMCA and they got to bang out a half hour's worth of workout and get back to work. That is stressful. I see time in the woods, time with family, taking 2 to 3 hours of a little run, a little swim, a little pool, billiards, maybe talking, a little reading. Those things take care of me. And I was an art major at RIT, Bachelor of Fine Arts. I enjoy painting, and I still paint a little. And when I get into the painting that I do on slates now, roof tile slates, clown images in their professions, it would be a clown behind the speaker,
sure,
behind the microphone for you. You really fall into a mode. In art school, we used to say, don't think, paint. And you just start painting and creating. That, I believe, would be a healthy, healthy thing for me to reach back to that.
And what keeps you from actually living with that awareness now, or with that in your life now?
Work is demanding. I'm a professional in a fundraising public relations position, so X number of time you divvy those up. So right now the time in the woods and a workout time are important. I grab those times in between. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm, sure,
I ride a motorcycle. I ride a Harley, and I'm not going out for long country rides. But the ride that I have, the 8 miles to work or to a meeting, and the ride itself is part of that culture of motorcycling, is being in the ride.
Right, right, right. Being in the moment.
Yeah. So those. But to answer your question, it's a lot of it's about work and dividing those things up. So I paint a little, I do a little of this, a little of that. I do a little bit of everything. I don't do a lot of everything, but work is a commanding position and opportunity to serve. So while I'm in that position, I'll serve it quite a large chunk of the day.
Right. As you were noting, as the head of an organization, a lot of your job is waving the flag and fundraising. And that you cannot be just totally in the moment responding to who is there. I mean, you do have to be in the moment, but it's not the same way. What you made me think about was over the years, I've often done painting or home repair or landscaping kind of work to kind of pay the bills, because I've cobbled together a very unusual life in terms of doing the things that I really want to do that are outside of the organization's purview. Because the way we are as equal human beings with each other means our religion, our institutional affiliations, our professional training doesn't matter anymore. We're just two human beings, and at bottom,
agreed,
that's what community is.
Agreed.
We have to have institutions, because institutions and organizations provide the scaffolding on which we build our lives, but they also tend to get a little too full of themselves, and there's the scaffolding on which we're lynched at the same time. So we need to hold those institutions with a certain amount of reverence, but a certain amount of suspicion. Be loyal, and also be trust and verify.
Trust and verify.
with institutions, right, and organizations. But also we need to this radical stance of equality before one another. That's a very different stance. So what I found when I would do the construction work and the carpentry work and stuff, you have to be really organized in that, and you have to have all of your steps down, and you have to have all your materials and tools and stuff. And to think that way is so structured that it sometimes gets in the way of my really seeing the people in front of me. And so now, as I spend more time in my life facilitating groups and working with people one-on-one and really living more of the community practice, the community structure, not organization, but the community presence, I find it really hard to shift gears. And as a consequence, I do less and less of that other kind of work and more of having conversations with people like yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. It's important.
Yeah. And both are important in life, but you can't do them at the same time.
And to make that separation is important. Good analogy.
Sure.
I'm the CEO. I'm the clown. I'm accepted as a clown, and they accept me as a CEO. It's a pretty important, serious position, but I'm a clown.
Right,
my
right.
My boss is a clown.
And they can say that and not get fired.
They can say that. That's right. And the community has been very accepting of that because they realize, I think what you're touching on is that that is something that I do, but it's not something that I am here. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing at the time I'm supposed to be doing it. And as you said, that scaffolding or putting all the pieces together. My pieces are together for this. My pieces are together for that. I can separate them and move forward.
Right, right, right. And I think sometimes what you have just described is something that we as a nation have almost failed to appreciate, because different tasks require different kinds of organizations and institutions to pull them off. And we're not all going to want the same stuff. So we're going to need multiple competing and even contradictory, opposite sides institutions. But we also need to have the space in our lives where we meet each other as equal human beings.
Agreed.
And we don't have that in an open or conscious way in this culture. And we can't build these diverse structures that we need, because we want different kinds of lives. And we don't all want the same life. And we need to have a fair distribution of resources, fair access, so we can build those things. But we need a separate space. We need a notion that we can meet each other. And I've often wondered, why don't we have someone who was kind of like a Will Rogers, who befriended Stephen Fetchett, who was really the only successful black entertainer in the white world at that time, and it was full of blackface and all of the demeaning stuff. But he and Will Rogers had a relationship of relative equality, and he was part Cherokee, and he could make fun of anybody and still be taken seriously. We don't have comedians that can level us. He also helped to sell the New Deal to a skeptical public, you know, which we don't often realize. And when going through major, major economic upheaval, we don't have people who are leveling our relationships in that way. And I guess I used to say when I grew up, I want to be Will Rogers, but I don't want to be the past. We need to move into the future. Will I'm
Rogers,
sorry, I'm sitting
the future.
Here. Right, right. We need to be moving into the future. And as you move into retirement, I don't see you, you're not going to be happy if you don't have a pretty big pond to play in. and retirement doesn't go easy on people who need that. So how do you anticipate having the relationships and having the space for reflection, downtime, taking naps and stuff? How can you be in a community that actually allows you to be transparent about that and have the life that you can live fully until you can no longer live?
The YMCA fulfills part of that. I'm also, my family, my wife and I are very involved with Camp Good Days and Special Times, a camp that improves the quality of life for children with cancer and their families, and see that as an ongoing family.
Sure.
As well as the non-blood related families that we have, in addition to our own.
Your own expanding family as you become a grandfather.
Yeah, and touching on all those. So,
and a half-brother.
That's right, exactly.
You didn't know yet.
In those structures, I think you hit it well, is meeting a new half-brother, we're different people, but we have this bond, and we can be transparent with another. And we realize that even though these things happened, we could have been again each other because of what this father did with my mother and your mother and your mother, but that didn't exist. We are all together in that equal sort of space, and it was very...
And it was his issue. It doesn't
exactly
have to be your issue.
And it was so refreshing, and I feel so good about it, and make attempts to be transparent with people. And also I've always lived that sense that you can do whatever you want as long as you don't force whatever it is that you're doing on me.
Right. Yeah, right?
Yeah. I don't expect a meat eater to eat meat. I don't expect people to hunt. If you don't ride a Harley, that's okay.
Right. Right,
I don't care. Right. Well, we could ride motorcycles together.
Right. And there are, and it's not just trivial preferences. It's life or death for an animal. And it's the environment that's necessary to produce certain, and to produce your vegetarian diet, you have to wipe out the animals on the land for the most part to produce it at any scale. And we are all making these choices, and we could spend some productive time looking at how each of our choices generates goodness, but also causes unintended negativity for others.
Yeah, and if it does, it may be
well, but it almost always does. And the issue is when is it too much?
Yeah,
and for whom is it too much? Yeah. And how do we accommodate each other, knowing that we're going to rub each other the wrong way? But a relationship without friction is not a good relationship. I mean, it doesn't work if you have a lover or a spouse, because you got to have some friction there.
Everything's not always peachy. That's right.
Well, but also growing. Sex doesn't work in pleasure if it doesn't involve some friction.
There we go.
So I mean, you probably, but that is at the bottom. We haven't really grown up. And what's really I find totally refreshing about you is you're both the CEO and the clown. And you've never held that as a contradiction that was problematic. It was a contradiction that was essential.
Well put. It is true. Enjoy both and love to be with the people that are with me.
You want to close with a song, Little Martha.
Yes.
What do you want to say about that?
This song is just a wonderful instrumental that drives me emotionally. And Duane Allman dreamed Jimi Hendrix playing this song. I believe it was Out of the Faucet or On the Faucet, and woke up in the middle of the night and put this song together. Instrumental by Duane Allman.
Here we go. Frank, it's been really good talking with you.
Thank you, Eric. Me too.